Johnny, don't erase 18 years of my life for something petty. Right? You want to find me? Okay, find me. You want to bar me from ever having a championship match again? Well, okay, I guess that's all right too. If me imitating your voice offended you, I'm sorry. But if there is an ounce of decency, you will continue to allow me to do what I love.
You know what, Joe? That was very passionate. But I didn't hear you say that you're sorry.
I said I'm sorry.
I don't think everybody up there in the cheap seats, and more importantly, those in the back, quite heard you.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so you said it, but now you're going to prove it. You want to keep your job? Beg me.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Over the Limit this Sunday, but perhaps it would seem appropriate to rename this show Reach My Limit. Just saying. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey Callahan, sitting alongside James McDonald, and you're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Yes, the WWE will present this lackluster pay-per-view this upcoming Sunday, and we're going to break down the show the best we can with the tools provided.
You know, you're right, Corey. This has not been the greatest build to a pay-per-view ever, but then again, we are in the post-WrestleMania lull. We're going to talk about the things that are interesting this Sunday in our Tale of the Tape. And of course, we're going to bring you all the latest news in our post-to-post report.
Yes, some important breaking news today regarding the format of Monday Night Raw. We'll get to that. Tonight, though, we are focusing on wrestling in Canada as we speak with a man integral to the industry up north here, founder of the CNWA and author of the book Wrestling in the Canadian West. His name is Vance Nevada.
Stay tuned to the show tonight to find out how you too can win a copy of Vance's book. And don't forget about the top five, where we're bringing you the top five WWE quitters.
As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's Manhattan drop things off with the Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
It's Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live back on the air. I'm Corey Callahan, sitting in the Smack Talk studios in Vancouver, British Columbia, right alongside my co-host, James McDonald. James, how you doing tonight, buddy?
You know what? It's a beautiful evening out there. I'm doing real good, buddy.
It's been very nice weather-wise in Vancouver lately, hasn't it?
It's like we brought the weather from Miami back with us. It's nice.
And because of the nice weather, I am incredibly sore this week because I have been outside wrestling, of all things. Can you believe that?
Wrestling?
Well, it's no secret that I do own a wrestling ring. And when the weather's nice, I head outside and I wrestle in it.
It's a beautiful thing to have, isn't it?
In my backyard. I don't have a warehouse to put the wrestling ring. I just set it up in the backyard.
We're not joking here. He has a full-sized professional wrestling ring set up in his backyard right now. He actually purchased this thing and had it shipped up to him. So.
Yes, from Kentucky to Vancouver. A couple years ago, I purchased it. And as a result of the nice weather, my back is quite sore tonight.
I'm telling you, there's nothing more exciting than having your own professional wrestling ring. But you know what's not exciting? Over the Limit coming up this Sunday.
Wow, nice segue. Before we get to Over the Limit, though, pay-per-view, James. I gotta remind everyone. www.smacktalkradiolive.com, facebook.com/smacktalkradio. If you're not on Twitter yet, you probably should get on it. It's at SRL Radio on Twitter.
Hey, you two could be trendy.
And really, an important email we should probably let you know about tonight. onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. That's where you're going to send your thoughts and opinions on professional wrestling, on what you liked and what you didn't like on Monday Night Raw. But more importantly, James, there's a contest coming up later tonight where you will have a chance to win a book by our guest this evening.
That's right. Prizes. Prizes, people, on Smack Talk Radio.
This show is growing at an incredibly fast rate.
If that doesn't give you a reason to tune in every week, I don't know what does.
Well, the sound of your voice is
a
reason
to tune in. There is that, of course, but...
That's right. Now, there is some incredibly bizarre breaking news today. I'm just going to come out and say it.
Oh, we're going to get into this before Over the Limit? All right,
yes,
let's do it.
Yes, we need to talk about this first because I feel very passionately about this subject. We will get to Over the Limit. Let's not deter from that. We are going to break down the pay-per-view here in our Tale of the Tape, but there is something I want to talk about, James, and that was announced earlier today via John Cena's Twitter account, of all places, that WWE's Monday Night Raw is going to be switching from a 2-hour show to a 3-hour show.
What? Is this April 1st? Is it April Fool's? No?
You are the worst actor, I swear.
I know I am. I'm terrible.
What are your initial thoughts on Monday Night Raw going from 2 hours to 3 hours? I'm dying to hear.
Oh, well, I'm already not impressed with what they're pumping out in a 2-hour segment. Give me an extra hour? I don't know.
Well, let's just start from the beginning. The WWE has put out 3-hour Monday Night Raws before. Recently, they just did one themselves. Like, what are your thoughts on the 3-hour shows that they've been pumping out already?
Well, my initial thought is they're definitely getting rid of the brand separation. Bringing out a 3-hour Raw every week. I mean, we've had this argument on past Smack Talk episodes about getting rid of the brand extension, and it was all because of TV time. Well, now you're giving them an extra hour to play with, so now you have this extra hour of time maybe to focus on secondary storylines. You know what? I'm not against having the extra hour. I mean, if it's done properly and they put out something interesting, an extra hour could be fine.
I find this announcement to be incredibly bizarre. I mean, obviously the USA Network is on board because this is an announcement that was made at a USA Network meeting, I guess, or conference, you could say, earlier today. It was officially announced by John Cena, like I had said.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the million-dollar question is, how do you plan on filling this extra hour? Are you going to make your wrestling matches longer? Are you going to be giving more storylines? Like, for example, if we have 5 storylines or feuds going right now, is that 5 going to be bumped up to 7 or 8? Are we going to see more talent on the show? Or are we going to go the opposite route? Are we going to see more commercials?
That's what I was just about to say. We're going to see more commercials and recaps and promo videos.
Are we going to see more time filler is really the best way to describe it. Now, Vince McMahon was quoted today as saying that this new 3-hour Raw is going to be an interactive experience for fans.
So they're going to get Twitter involved, essentially.
You know that's on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And what he's hinting at is that fans, through different methods of social media, will have the opportunity to decide matches that are scheduled, to decide match stipulations. It's kind of like a Cyber Sunday each and every week on Monday Night Raw.
I don't mind that. That's kind of a good idea.
Really? I can't stand that idea.
Why? Why is that bad?
Because this is... Why are you giving the control to the fans? Those pay-per-views that they've done where they let the fans vote by the website or whatever, that stuff doesn't work. Again, there are some things in life that, you know, the fan just wants to sit down in front of their TV and just be shown a TV show. They don't want to have that control. In professional wrestling, giving the fans the opportunity to vote on a match stipulation or who's going to be facing who, it just doesn't work. these voting processes that they've done in the past, they're so rigged. Like, it's obvious that they're rigged.
It's all work, of course.
So why are you doing that each and every week now? I hated it when they did it once a year, and now they're going to do it each and every week?
Because they want more fan involvement. They want it to seem more interactive, I guess.
And what I'm saying is the fans going to buy into that?
Oh, of course they will.
I have not seen any positive reaction today based off this announcement.
Really?
There's really not too many people that are excited from a two-hour Raw to three-hour Raw. Mostly because a two-hour Raw at this point is hard to get through as it is.
Well, weren't we just discussing on Monday that in a two-hour Raw episode, you know, how long are the promo videos and the recaps and
that's what I'm saying.
This just happened moments ago in case you weren't watching.
You can't
stuff
even
like that,
you
right?
can't even fill a 2-hour show with enough entertaining material, let's just say. 3 hours?
Well, maybe they'll focus more on mid-card programs now.
It's a pay-per-view every single Monday is one way of looking at it.
It's one way. It'll be rough for us when we start doing our SRLs.
Yeah, well, that show's getting canceled, by the way. No, like, the realistic truth is you're having a hard time filling a 2-hour show, so what are you going to fill a 3-hour show with? My guess is longer matches and more commercial advertising.
I'm a fan of the longer matches.
They would not be doing this if there wasn't going to be more money involved, right? And to me, this is the basis behind the WWE making this decision. Vince McMahon is looking to increase revenues. Obviously, the stock price has been down, and they need to increase revenues within the company. What better way to increase revenues by basically adding an hour to an already produced television show? The cameras are already in place. The lights are already hung. The ring is already set up. So you're not really adding any extra dollars in terms of setup.
No, you're not.
You know what I mean? Everything's already there. You're just going live for an extra hour and adding that extra hour of commercial advertising. Really, it's a smart move on Vince to get that extra revenue. But the downside is you might be watering down the product and you might be
more than it already is.
Exactly.
I mean, we're already seeing a trend here where the second hour of Monday Night Raw is doing worse numbers than the first hour. So are you going to tell me that this third hour is going to do better?
It's just, to me, it's just too much with not enough. There's just not enough to fill 3 hours. Not to mention the extra stress that you're putting on the writing staff to come up with an extra hour of programming.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's all going to come down to creative and the writing staff with this extra hour of Raw that you're going to have. Because, you know, if they fill it with, like, more mid-card programs and actually make them interesting and make them logical, you know, people will tune in for a 3-hour Raw, no problem. Again, it's all going to come down to how creative handles it and how the writing team basically, you know, comes up with their stuff to, you know, show us.
That would be the bonus to this, is that talent that you don't normally get to see will have an extra hour of opportunity.
Guys like R-Truth, Kofi Kingston, you know, maybe more Lord Tensai. Maybe we'll have more of a storyline with, say, someone like Brodus Clay. Who knows, you know?
What does this mean for SmackDown, then?
I think they're just going to get rid of the brand extension altogether. SmackDown's just going to be like another...
If you're tuning in for a 3-hour Raw and you're going to see all the superstars on the 3-hour Raw anyways, are you still enticed to tune into a 2-hour SmackDown on Friday?
If they continue the storylines.
Yeah.
Like, remember, like SmackDown 10 years ago, SmackDown 10 years ago was almost better than Monday Night Raw. With the characters and the storylines and the matches that they had, it was like you almost wanted to watch SmackDown more than you did Monday Night
Raw.
Well,
that was in the days of.
Yeah, but there's no reason that they can't go back to that.
Well, I was gonna say that was in the days of the time when they were really promoting SmackDown as a number one show, because there was a time when Raw and SmackDown were going head to head, and you really couldn't decide which was the number one show, right?
Yeah.
Those days are over. It's now obvious that it's Monday Night Raw, and SmackDown is a distant second. To me, this just widens that gap even further.
I don't know.
I had read somewhere today that in Canada, you're looking at 24 hours a month of programming with Raw and SmackDown.
24 hours a month. So that's a full day, a month of...
I'm just trying to do the math.
...of here. WWE programming.
12...
Well, you got plus 3, 6, 12, yeah. And you got... And you got 4 and 4, yeah. So it's 8, so that's 20 hours.
20 hours. Throw in superstars.
Then throw in superstars. Yeah, it's 24 hours a month of WWE programming. It's a lot.
It is a lot.
plus pay-per-views.
I'm shocked at this decision. My suggestion would be make the 2 hours more entertaining first and then worry about a third hour. That's just my suggestion, but I can understand why Vince is doing it. It'll be very interesting to see how the fans respond to this, because you could potentially be watering it down big time. It's like poker on television. Yeah. You know, when poker started, there was this big craze. You throw out 100 poker shows and no one really cares anymore. It's not as important.
No.
I'm not saying that's going to happen here. It's just going to be very interesting to see how the fans react to it. Now, this all does get started in July. It doesn't start right away.
No, I think July 23rd, I believe, was the first.
July 23rd, yes. That it actually coincides with being the 1,000th episode of Monday Night Raw. So they're going to kick off their 1,000th episode with a 3-hour, and they're going to continue that.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Do you think they're going to go back to their old format of having one championship belt, maybe unifying the world and the WWE titles?
I guess that
would be... Because honestly, to me, this whole extra hour of Monday Night Raw just screams, yeah, we're getting rid of the draft, we're getting rid of the brand extension.
Well, the draft is apparently on the way. It's apparently coming.
I've heard conflicting reports when it comes to the draft.
Nothing's been officially announced.
If they do come out with a draft this year, it's just going to be a total joke.
Of course.
A total joke.
Oh, I cannot wait for that episode of Smack Talk Radio Live.
God.
All right, let's move on to the show that is this coming Sunday.
Over the Limit.
Here we go. And before we get into the whole Over the Limit show, I have a question, and we're calling that tonight's poll question.
The poll question. Log on to Facebook.com/SmackTalkRadio and cast your vote.
It's really simple, James, and this is how I want to start it off. Tonight's Smack Talk Radio Live's poll question, are you ordering Over the Limit this Sunday? Yes or no? Wow. And really, that's what it comes down to, because this show has got to be one of the worst hyped pay-per-views. I mean, definitely of 2012.
It's probably gonna be their least bought pay-per-view of the year. That's what I'm predicting.
Well, cast your vote at facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Wow.
I'm losing it tonight. But really, that is the $1 million question, James. Will you be ordering it? I've already said I'm not ordering it.
No, I'm definitely not.
I said it Monday.
I'm not going to order this.
So for what reason do people have to order this pay-per-view on Sunday?
They don't.
No, not at all.
I'm just gonna come out and straight up say they don't. I mean, the tag match doesn't excite me. The Divas match doesn't excite me. Pretty much the only match that excites me on this card is Punk and Daniel Bryan, and there's been no build up to this match.
It's not even the main event.
You know, I know these two are gonna have a great match. Yeah, exactly. It's not even the main event. I know these two are gonna have a great match, but like, I don't care about the match. There's no reason for me to be emotionally invested into this match. Hmm. You know?
Well, we'll get to Punk and Bryan. I want to start off with the main event of Over the Limit, and that would be John Cena versus John Laurinaitis.
Battle of the Johns.
And, yeah, that's true. And just a bizarre way to go home to Over the Limit this Sunday. Here's John Cena and John Laurinaitis this past Monday.
That makes you 1-for-4. 1-for-4 doesn't make you a winner. 1-for-4 makes you a loser. Loser! 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 Loser!
Are you done?
Loser! No, say something. Go ahead. Go ahead. Say something.
Are you done?
Loser! Go ahead. I won't talk. I promise. Go ahead.
Are you done?
That is some funny stuff, I gotta admit.
Really, Cole? Really? Because I thought that was some of the worst stuff of 2012 so far.
John Cena at his comedic worst. Like, you know, I honestly thought that we'd see a progression in John Cena's character following his loss at WrestleMania. You know, maybe he'd become a little bit more angry, a little bit more serious, a little bit more of a believable character. But nope, he comes out, he's the same old cape-wearing cartoon Super Cena.
I would guess that the reason why they had John Cena come out and act the way he did this past Monday is because, yes, he is divorcing his wife, and they wanted to show that it's not bothering the face of the WWE. And, you know, he's still the same guy, and he's still riding high. And you know, that, to me, that I've already separated his divorce from what I'm seeing on Monday Night Raw, so you don't need to make that connection for me. But just what I witnessed there was absolutely disgusting.
It was horrendous.
First of all, he's not funny in any way.
No, he's not. He's just annoying.
Straight cheesy, up, over the top.
Straight up, just annoying. That's the one word for me that describes it.
I swear he didn't put any thought into his promo on Monday Night Raw with John Laurinaitis.
Oh, such a bad copy of Ace Ventura. Oh, I don't know.
Very interesting.
Like, what? I don't know. I don't know what else bad I can say about this segment. All of Monday Night Raw was terrible. The Big Show segment was terrible. This end segment with John Cena was terrible.
I was going to ask you, like, you know, you have John Cena on Monday just embarrassing himself. But then on the flip side, the guy in the ring with him was John Laurinaitis. How do you think Laurinaitis looked this past Monday?
He definitely looked at this Monday really established him as probably the top heel character in the WWE. I mean, nobody gets more heat than John Laurinaitis. So, I don't know. If you're going for the cheap heat type thing, then yeah, he looked a lot better on Monday. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, they definitely gave him a ton of TV time to accelerate the fact that he is the biggest heel in the company.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he did well. I liked him with the Big Show segment. And I thought when he was in the ring with John Cena, just his facial expressions, just how he looked, he looked official, he looked serious, he did look like the boss. I did like him on Monday, to admit.
They've done a good job of selling him as the asshole boss, right?
Yeah. And it's going to be very interesting to see this Sunday, because the stipulations have been added that no one can interfere, because if they do, they will get fired. And, you know, it's... No, is it no DQ? Did they announce no DQ or no?
No, they didn't say no disqualification. Well, the only way you can win is by pin or submission, so maybe that does count as no disqualification.
Okay. But the other big one would be that if John Laurinaitis does lose to John Cena this Sunday, he is fired as the general manager.
So right away that screams to me that Laurinaitis is not going to lose, because they've invested so much into
him. So you don't think they're taking him off television?
No, definitely not. I mean, when you got a guy who's getting as much... why would you take him off of television?
So you're telling me that a guy who just beat Brock Cena.
You're John Laurinaitis over here. Holy.
A guy who just beat Brock Lesnar no more than a month ago is going to lose to John Laurinaitis, a man who has not stepped in the ring for a very long time.
Yes. I am saying that. It's not going to be clean. There's definitely going to be outside interference
of
some
sort.
And that
was my next question. What would be the reason that John Laurinaitis actually beats John Cena?
Oh, because there's going to be somebody that helps him. I've been seeing a lot of reports. People are saying it's going to be Brock Lesnar. I don't know if it's going to be Brock Lesnar, because they're really, really tight now on the remaining amount of appearances that he has. I kind of think that it's going to be the Big Show. This is what I'm thinking. I think maybe we'll see a heel turn from the Big Show. He'll come out, help Johnny win his match, because he's technically not a superstar anymore. He got fired. Right?
And that they were in cahoots the whole time, or is this just a recent decision by the Big Show?
Probably just a recent decision.
Yeah.
You know, at least for me, I think that the logic behind it would be that he just so desperate to get his job back, because they're really, to me, that segment on Sunday... really, to me, said, well, I guess they were trying to sell to other people, but said to me that, you know, Big Show can't do anything else, right? This is all he knows. This is all he can do.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes that. So he's going to do whatever it takes to get his job back. And if that means helping Johnny win his match against Cena, you know, then so be it.
One thing I do not want to see this Sunday is kind of like a rehashing of what happened at last year's SummerSlam, where just some random superstar returns.
Oh, Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash wasn't involved with anything WWE related at that time, and he comes back and he's the deciding factor of the main event.
So
I don't want that to happen.
So you wouldn't be excited if Scott Steiner ran in the ring.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to see that. That's not... That's just such a cheap way to end a pay-per-view. Would you agree?
Yeah, it depends. It really depends on the guy that they have coming back. Somebody like Kevin Nash or some old guy like that, then yeah,
it was Goldberg, it's a different story.
Even if it was Goldberg, that'd be even cheaper if it was Goldberg, I think.
Yeah, but I can't see Goldberg coming back to help Laurinaitis. Oh. I'm just saying, like, I know what you're saying. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I could understand why they would do that with the Big Show. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes sense, right? You fire him the week before, you know that here's an opportunity to get his job back. You got to help me win against John Cena. To me, that's a storyline that makes sense. Yep. It's logical. Am I excited if it actually happens? No, because here you and I are sitting here predicting it right now, right? And we like to be surprised at the end of a pay-per-view. But I don't want to see this random person coming back to help him.
Not necessarily. Sometimes it just makes sense to go with the predictable way.
I know.
You know, don't throw us a curveball that doesn't make any sense or that's totally illogical just because
we
predicted it.
Well, and maybe they're going with the train of thought that this pay-per-view is not going to sell that well anyways, so let's not give it all away on this show and let's just go with the predictable route.
Yeah.
They could be thinking that as well.
I mean, this could easily set up like a Big Show John Cena program heading down the road, or it could allow Cena some time off if he wants to, mm-hmm. Go through all the proceedings and dealings with his divorce. You know, maybe this would be the perfect opportunity for him to, be written off of television for a while. And then you've got, Big Show helping out Johnny. Now he's, the enforcer for Laurinaitis.
Interesting.
So.
All right.
That totally writes, Lord Tensai out of the picture. Yeah. Whatever happened to him, eh?
Well, he's on Superstars this week.
Yeah, now he's on Superstars, wrestling Tyson Kidd. You go from beating John Cena and CM Punk clean to wrestling Tyson Kidd on Superstars.
It's only 1 week, but I know what you're saying. All right, prediction time. You're taking Laurinaitis this Sunday?
Oh, yeah. I don't see any other way.
I will take Laurinaitis as well.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, well, let's talk about the match you wanted to talk about first, earlier, CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
Now, my biggest complaint about this match this Sunday is just the lack of hype for it.
Exactly. I have no reason to be interested in this match. They've presented me with nothing that is going to make me fork $40 out of my wallet to watch this match.
And again, for a go-home show heading into this Sunday, you have these two guys about to square off and a match that everyone really is looking for. And this is really all we get to advance this storyline on the Go Home show.
Hi. What's up?
Hey. I just wanted to say good luck on Sunday.
I appreciate that. Thanks. But don't take this the wrong way. I don't want to get involved in between you and your boyfriend or your ex-boyfriend or whatever it is you two are. I don't need the drama. I've known Daniel Bryan a long time. I don't trust him. I don't want you to think that I think this is a setup or anything like that, but I don't trust him. And you I've known a very short amount of time, and in that time you've been pretty unstable. So, I'll see you later.
One of the least hyped matches of the year so far, and it's very surprising considering this is a match that people are really genuinely looking forward to. Mm-hmm.
These two have a long history together. They've worked tons of times together in Ring of Honor and just put on some amazing matches, so they're comfortable with each other in the ring. I mean, as far as match quality goes, I know it's going to be a good match, but
it was just very bizarre to me that really the major advancement this week was CM Punk talking with AJ backstage.
So do you think that maybe AJ is going to be involved in the finish? I think I asked you this on Monday.
Yeah, of course. And I would say yes. In what capacity? I don't know.
I think AJ is going to try to help Daniel Bryan win the match, but it's going to backfire on her and it's going to end up causing Punk to win the match. I really don't see CM Punk losing this match. I actually, if they were smart, they would have CM Punk keep the belt and extend this feud, throughout the summer months, maybe up all the way up to SummerSlam.
It's possible. Well, they haven't been given a lot of time yet.
No.
I don't know.
Who knows? They could, if this continues past over the limit, which I think it will, we could see an awesome build-up between these two, if done properly.
Will we see, you had mentioned that these two, have wrestled in Ring of Honor in the past. Will we see the Code of Honor handshake at the beginning of the match?
No, they don't do that in WWE. You got a good guy and a bad guy now. Hmm. They don't shake hands.
I disagree. I think we will see that on Sunday.
You think so?
Yep.
Well, I'll be...
Because I feel like this match...
I'll mark out if I see that.
Well, I'm just seeing that... I'm thinking that this match is being put together for the internet audience. And, you know, these guys know who's watching this match. And the people who know what the handshake's all about will get that. And the people who don't will wonder why they were shaking hands. Like, I feel like you'll see something like that.
Really?
And the bigger question is are we going to see a WWE style of wrestling match? Or are we going to see a Ring of Honor style of wrestling match?
Exactly. Are we going to see some, you know, creative... have their fingerprints all over this thing with unnecessary dramatics and theatrics in this match? Or is it just going to be, you know, a real good
technical
match that's, you know, just going to surprise people? I don't know, man. Do you really think they're going to shake hands at the beginning of this match?
I do.
Do you really think WWE is going to let them, you know, give a shout-out to a rival promotion like that?
Yeah, I do.
You do, eh?
I think that's going
to
happen.
Interesting. Okay, you're calling it. We are going to see a handshake at the beginning of the Daniel Bryan CM Punk match.
That's right.
I almost want to pay $40 just to see if we see this handshake. No, not really, but...
I'll come over to your house then if that happens. okay, well, one last final match I wanted to ask you about before we end the segment. The Fatal 4-Way, Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, Alberto Del Rio, and Sheamus for the World Heavyweight Championship.
I think this is going to be a really good match. I mean, I really can't see Sheamus losing this one.
No.
No. I mean, I don't know. What about you?
I know I'm in the minority here. I'm going with Alberto Del Rio.
Really?
Yeah.
You are in the total minority, man.
I know.
Because out of all these four guys, he's the least
likely to win this match, I think. I feel like they want to put Del Rio right back in the spotlight where he was before. And what a better opportunity to do that. No one's expecting him to win.
Yeah.
And you could come off this match with a program with Jericho if he is sticking around. Or you could have Sheamus and Del Rio go at it for a while because of the title loss. I'm picking Alberto Del Rio.
Okay, quickly, predictions for the other three matches. Tag match, Kofi Kingston, R-Truth versus Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger. Who's going to take this one? This is for the tag titles.
I'm saying Kofi and R-Truth.
Kofi and R-Truth. I'm going to go with you on that one, I think so.
What else we got?
Also, we got the Divas Championship match. We got Beth Phoenix taking on the champion, Layla.
I'm going to go with Beth Phoenix.
I'm going to go with who cares. Next match, we got Zack Ryder versus Kane. Who do you think is going to take this match?
I'm going to go with Kane.
You're gonna go with Kane.
I think Zack Ryder's time is done.
You know what? I think Zack Ryder's going to win this match, and it's going to be the end of their little... I mean, obviously, this match is, you know, should have happened like 6 weeks ago, but I think Zack Ryder's going to take this match.
Is that all the matches on the show?
I believe so.
Yeah.
If there's any other matches, then...
You've done a really good job of hyping this one up, WWE, because we can't even remember them if there are anymore.
I mean, we might possibly have an unscheduled Brodus Clay squashing. Who knows?
I'm sure we'll see Brodus Clay on the show. All right, Over the Limit this Sunday. Call your cable subscriber and order now.
Or don't.
Coming up on the show that we like to call Smack Talk Radio Live, we are talking in our local wrestling scene with the CNWA founder. And actually, I just want to give the website address, give you a chance to check it out at cnwawrestling.ca.
Very knowledgeable gentleman.
Very interesting idea. Coming off the brain of this man, his name is Vance Nevada.
Also, later on, don't forget about our top five, where we're going to run down the top five WWE quitters.
And our post-to-post report next.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live. Don't go nowhere.
Catching you up with the business of the business.
It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, the post-to-post report, catching you up with the business of the business.
Yes, it is.
Now, James, I gotta admit, the big news of the week typically tonight would be the announcement that as of July 23rd, Monday Night Raw will be moving from a two-hour show to a three-hour show. But since we covered that earlier, we're gonna move on to other topics. Keeping with the WWE, though, NXT and FCW, you've heard of those shows, I'd hope.
Of course.
They held their first TV tapings today at their new home, Full Sail University, which is located in Winter Park, Florida. Full Sail University is a for-profit trade school specializing in new media programs, you could say. In regards to the actual taping held today, Triple H was on hand to make an appearance, as well as Sheamus versus Alberto Del Rio for the World Heavyweight Championship. The event was said to be sold out, and any fan wearing WWE merchandise had an opportunity to have their seats upgraded. The move to Full Sail University is expected to be a good one, as it creates a permanent home for NXT and FCW, and WWE expects to use the university as a training ground for careers behind the scenes with the WWE.
That'd be cool to be going to that university, eh?
It just kind of reminds me of, like, the Impact Zone, how they have a permanent home that they do these tapings at. Low budget. You don't have to worry about traveling the guys around. You can keep the talent local in Florida. It's a win-win.
Totally is.
And but you know, these shows are at this point, they're still going to be on the WWE.com website. I mean, NXT is on television, but I believe the plan is to be exclusively on the internet. It's interesting.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the Impact Zone there, Corey, because we're going to switch gears to TNA here, because it was announced on Thursday that Impact Wrestling will broadcast live during the summer.
Such a good idea.
Oh, totally. The first live episode will air May 31st, which is also the start of their new time slot of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursday nights.
You have to be broadcasting your flagship show live.
It's so much different when you have a live show as opposed to a pre-taped one. You just look at the difference between Raw and SmackDown, right?
There you go. Enough said. Moving back to the WWE now, it was announced Thursday that a new two-year television deal with the network D-Smart has been reached in Turkey. The deal will include a one-hour international version of WWE Raw and SmackDown to be broadcast across the country. WWE executive Ed Wells was quoted as saying, "The new partnership represents WWE's plan in the region to expand the brand."
Just what can you say about that? Total global empire the WWE's becoming, eh?
At least they're trying to expand. That's, you gotta give them that.
Now, the Wrestling Observer is reporting that WWE has signed Ashley Fleer Johnson to a developmental contract. Now, Corey, she is the daughter of WWE Hall of Famer Ric Flair. She is expected to report to the company's developmental training facility in the summer. Ashley would be the third Flair to enter the wrestling industry, following David and Reed.
You had said Ashley Fleer Johnson. I believe it's pronounced Ashley Flair Johnson.
Is it Flair?
Yeah, they just spell it differently. I know Ric Flair's real last name is spelt that way.
I remember hearing somewhere that it was pronounced different, but I don't know, you could be right.
Interesting though, following David and Reed's footsteps here.
It'd be funny to see a... See if she comes out in the sequined gown and starts going, woo!
That would be very interesting. And finally, to wrap up the news for the Post-to-Post report this week, The Rock, he's cracked Forbes magazine's list of the 100 most powerful celebrities in the world.
Wow.
Forbes estimates that The Rock made over $36 million over the past 12 months, and it does not specify if that includes the money he made headlining WrestleMania 28 against John Cena. In an article posted on Forbes' website, Rock noted that he has his manager, ex-wife Danny, or sorry, The Rock noted that he and his manager, ex-wife Danny Garcia, changed their approach to The Rock's wrestling background, saying, "It reached a point where I felt that instead of me trying to conform to Hollywood, I needed to have Hollywood conform to me." Because if you remember, James, there was a time when The Rock was ignoring wrestling altogether.
Yeah.
And he did not want to be associated with the name The Rock.
Yeah, he didn't even want to be called The Rock.
And
which of course led to a lot of, you know, real life animosity with some of the wrestlers and stuff.
And in this article on Forbes magazine website, The Rock says that this was under the advice of his old management team. And when he decided to embrace his wrestling background, you know, part of that was firing his old management.
Hmm.
So I say good for The Rock.
Well, there you go. Full on proof that The Rock is easily the biggest star the WWE's ever produced.
And the biggest asset.
Yep. No, I totally agree.
In terms of financials this week, the WWE stock price is $8.39 a share.
Ugh.
It did drop 27 cents today on the heels of the three-hour Raw announcement. Not sure if that's related or not, but it's worth noting. In terms of television ratings this week, Monday Night Raw for May 14th, which was the lead-in show to this Sunday's Over the Limit pay-per-view, it scored a 2.94 rating, which is down 3% from the 3.03 rating last week and down 12% from 2 weeks ago. Raw was below a 3.0 rating for the first time since February 13th and scored the second lowest rating of the year, only beating out the January 9th episode of Raw. Raw averaged 4.09 million viewers in the first hour and increased to an average of 4.32 million in the second hour. Raw did face tough competition this week, however, from the NBA playoffs, which included the Oklahoma Thunder versus Los Angeles Lakers game, which as a comparison, it averaged 6.69 million viewers.
Jeez. Man, have you been checking out WWEshop.com lately? They've like totally slashed the prices on all Rey Mysterio merchandise. We're talking like 20% off, 30% off. I've seen some stuff that's even 75% off. It's just...
I wonder why that is.
It's just nutty. I don't know. You know, it's... This whole deal with Rey Mysterio just has me, you know, shaking my head because...
Well, he is under suspension right now.
You know, and it's probably for the stupidest thing ever. Rey Mysterio is a clean guy. He's an upstanding role model. You know... I don't know.
So you don't think the discounts of merchandise has anything to do with the fact that Ray is on his second wellness policy violation?
That's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah, it definitely has to do with the fact that he's on his second violation. What I'm getting at is that the second violation here is just, I don't know. I don't even know what to make of it, right? I've heard so many conflicting stories, so who knows what to make of Rey Mysterio.
Interesting.
And then...
All right. Well, coming up on the show, Smack Talk Radio Live... We're going to head to the local wrestling scene where we're speaking with CNWAWrestling.ca's founder, Vance Nevada, an outstanding idea to come up with a wrestling alliance within Canada, separate from the NWA, which I'm sure everyone is familiar with. We're going to talk to Vance about that and his book, which you will have a chance to win. It's called Wrestling in the Canadian West. Stick around to have a chance to win that book.
It's a must-listen-to interview. And also, later on, we're going to be doing the top five. And tonight, it's the top five WWE quitters.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
And the peculiar thing is this, my friends. The song we sang on that fateful night, it didn't actually sound anything like this song! This is just a
the local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, the local wrestling scene, catching you up to date on everything around the Pacific Northwest.
That's right, we are too.
Except tonight, James, we're heading a little east because we're talking to a man from Alberta. I think he's in Alberta these days. He travels a lot, so it's tough to keep tabs on where this guy's from.
He's all over the place in Canada with professional wrestling.
And he's also the founder of a great idea that I've been recently made aware of. It's called the CNWA, the Canadian National Wrestling Alliance. Have you heard about this before?
I have, actually.
And what it is, it's a group of independent organizations across Western Canada. We're going to find out more exactly what that entails, but it's a group of organizations across around Western Canada that have come together and formed a wrestling alliance, much like the NWA that you've heard of with the historic past.
Very similar, yes.
And this is not affiliated with NWA, but I think it's a great idea.
So why don't you tell everybody who we have on the show tonight?
Author and professional wrestler, Vance Nevada. Vance, are you there, buddy?
I am. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks
Very
for coming
well.
On the show. I really appreciate it tonight.
My pleasure.
Now, before we get into just what exactly the CNWA is and, you know, everything that surrounds that, I wanted to ask and just give an opportunity for you to explain to the people who may have never heard of who Vance Nevada is, just what you're all about, what you've been up to for the last little while, and you know, where are you wrestling these days?
You know what? The schedule this year has been so busy that sometimes I forget.
Was I right when I said that you're in Alberta these days?
I am, yeah. I'm based in Red Deer, Alberta.
Okay.
But my schedule on a weekly basis, and it's, you know, interesting because, you know, every year, you know, you sort of take stock and you say, you know what? I think I've probably accomplished all that I have left to accomplish, so. And maybe this will be my last year, and usually when I say that to somebody, my wife will remind me that, hey, you've been saying that for the last 5 years. you know, this year, you know, over the past year, you know, had an opportunity to do some, you know, reality TV with Roddy Piper. You know, now doing a lot more traveling again. Looks like I probably have 84 dates this year, coast to coast.
Wow.
You know, plus a couple of book projects on the horizon. So, you know, still pretty busy.
How long have you been actively wrestling for?
I started in 1993 in Winnipeg for a promotion there called River City Wrestling, you know, doing little community club shows. And I wrestled there for about 8 years until, you know, my first opportunity came up to tour nationally. And went to the East Coast to wrestle for Emile Dupree, whose son wrestled in the WWE for a while as part of La Resistance. And Emile was a, you know, a legendary promoter in the East Coast, had been promoting for about 40 years. And after my first taste of traveling, you know, outside of a local territory, I realized I'd never be happy just sitting in one city again and wrestling in one specific scene. And after that, I mean, the following year, 2002, I think I did 144 matches that year. And then relocated to the West Coast, and I was there for, I think I was in the West Coast for about 7 years before coming to Alberta. So all in about 19 years, just past the 19-year mark.
Is wrestling for you a full-time job? Are you one of those wrestlers that are lucky enough to stick to wrestling and wrestling only and not have a day job, or does that just not exist anymore, and are you forced to work elsewhere?
You know, I don't know of any wrestler in Canada that's, you know, fortunate enough to be able to just make a living wrestling unless they're maybe living off some family wealth. You know, the year that I did 144 dates and then moved to the West Coast, I think I did about 13 months where all I was doing was wrestling, and then, you know, had associations with different wrestling schools. So I was training guys in Winnipeg before I left there. Then when I got to the West Coast, I was training for Michelle Starr's House of Pain Wrestling School. So I was in the ring 5 days a week between the school and the wrestling shows. But, you know, until very recently, it wasn't busy enough for anybody to make a living. So you're always trying to find other opportunities that are going to help you pay the bills and hope that, you know, the work that you find is complementary to the wrestling schedule, so one isn't sacrificing the other.
Now, you had mentioned that when you came to the West Coast, you were, you know, not just a wrestler, but a trainer. Are you still actively training today?
Not so much. Mostly, I mean, there's, you know, some really good wrestling schools running right now. So out of Edmonton, Phil LaFon, and Massive Damage have a wrestling school up there on the West Coast. Michelle Starr and Disco Fury have been producing some really good talent in Calgary, Lance Storm School, of course. So a lot of what I do now is you know, more mentoring the young wrestlers on the business side of things. So they get into the wrestling business. They know all the moves and holds. You know, they've been taught very well at some of these schools, but nobody has really focused on the business side of wrestling. So, yeah, they know how to do a headlock takedown or a top rope, 360 kind of a flip or some kind of thing like that, but they don't know how to take that and sell it and make money. And that's really the stuff that I do, is sort of mentor young wrestlers on the business end of wrestling so that they can be more marketable and get more visibility for themselves.
You and I had briefly talked about this in Las Vegas when we had met at the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, which you are an integral part of as well. But what would be your advice to these young up-and-comers today? You talked about selling moves and that sort of thing. Like, what is the best advice that you can give an up-and-comer in today's wrestling market?
Don't do it.
Wow, that's some great advice.
Yeah, it's kind of a joke that I have with, other of my peers, is they ask me, what advice would you give to someone that wants to get into the wrestling business? And it's the same advice that B. Brian Blair gave me in 1993 when I told him that I wanted to be a professional wrestler. And he said, don't do it.
Yeah.
Exhaust every other career possibility first. Right. And, the reason I say that is, what I find, in the wrestling business, and you guys might find this in the broadcasting world as well, that you have so many people that have gotten into the business for the wrong reasons. They don't really have a genuine passion for it. It's just something that is cool to do, or, they're aware of some kind of perk that you get as a result of that work.
And do you come across that often? Do you come across that quite often with new students?
Frequently.
Yeah.
And I'm very open with guys. I'll talk to, a young wrestler, and he'll say, hey, what would it take for, me to get promoted at whatever level? And I would say, well, my advice to you would be, these are all the elements that would need to be in place. But I would not endorse you for that role. And sometimes they're offended by that. And they'll say, well, why not? And I'll tell them why. I don't think that, your heart's in the right place.
Let me ask. Go finish what you're saying there.
Go ahead. No, absolutely. I'm just starting to ramble.
I was just going to say, on the flip side, let me ask you this. What advice would you have for trainers today who are training up and coming students? Are you a fan of the hard knock, maybe the old traditional style of training, or have we evolved to a more relaxed environment when it comes to wrestling training? Like, what would be your advice to trainers?
I think, it's kind of a two-parter, because, on one hand, when wrestling really took a downturn, in the late 90s, after the, sort of that Stone Cold era had passed, a lot of, independent wrestling shows weren't drawing money, and a lot of people realized, we're going to make money by opening a wrestling school. And so they would start to mass produce these guys, and I think that still happens to a degree to this day. And you have trainers that come in and they'll take a guy's money, train him, realize that they're never going to be anything, and then just kind of set him loose. And I don't want to say anything negative about anybody's program, but I've run into that at different times. And sometimes the trainers will get very brutally honest with these guys after they've got all their money. And then they'll tell them, I don't think you've got what it takes. But now they feel that they've been trained, and they'll go out and contact promoters, and promoters aren't checking credentials. They say, oh, we got this guy that's come out of this camp, so he must be pretty good. And, it waters things down. And, wrestling fans, aren't uneducated, contrary to all the jokes that people will tell about the front row at a wrestling show. Wrestling fans are probably among the most savvy of the sports fans, because they know what's good and they know what they like. And, they go to an independent wrestling show, and if they see crap, you may not get them back in the door again. Mm-hmm.
What is your take on independent wrestling today? Are you happy with what you see when you go to these different towns and different promotions? Because you are someone that is traveling to different promotions throughout the western side of Canada. Like, are you a fan of what you see? Or are you just sort of cringing at the way these shows are put on?
You know what, I think it's a mix of both. You know, overall, I'm very excited about Canadian wrestling. I'm very passionate about it, and always have been. You know, when you get, you know, into different locker rooms and you see guys, you know, that really know their stuff, you know, and getting into shared locker rooms. You know, in the last 3 weeks on the road, I've been in locker rooms with the great Gamma Singh, Leo Burke, Johnny Devine, Kyle Sebastian, Michelle Starr, Casey Andrews, Danny Duggan, Matt Fairlane. Some of these guys are fantastic athletes and fantastic wrestlers. And, you know, it's my belief that the reason that you don't see more of these guys on TV has a lot more to do with, you know, the border issue and, you know, the additional struggles for Canadians to get work visas over Americans who are already in the country and have access to the opportunities with the big companies. But there is probably the highest level of performance that I've ever seen on independent wrestling shows. There's a lot of talent here, and anybody that comes out to experience Canadian wrestling for the first time, not knowing what to expect when they go in, are completely blown away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we found that, you know, in Central Alberta, where people came out to see wrestling when we started here about a year ago, and had never been to a live match before, or hadn't been to in 20 years since Stampede closed in 1989. And they're like, unbelievable. You know, we didn't know what to expect, and that show blew our minds, and they've been loyal fans ever since and haven't missed a single match.
There definitely is a lot of untapped talent here in Canada.
Agreed.
You know, a lot of agents, for example, with the WWE may not even know about half of them. If you could get the message out there to these people, who really is impressing you these days in Canada, and who would have a really good opportunity at making it to the big show?
In my view, right now, and it's not to dismiss anybody, but, you know, based on, you know, who I'm seeing, and keep in mind, I'm in a lot of locker rooms and seeing, you know, every roster. So I may not focus on it. There may be somebody that I'm overlooking because I'm only, you know, one night in a town and I'm not there for weeks at a time. But the four guys that I think probably have the best shot to make it if you know, the right people can get their eyes on them. First and foremost, out of Edmonton, is Bobby Sharp. Bobby started wrestling when he was 15 years old, and has been wrestling 9 years. So now he's, you know, 23, 24 years old, already with 9 years experience, when most guys are just sort of, you know, getting their feet under them at this stage in their career. So he's got nowhere to go but up. Second guy that I would say, and it's no secret that I've, you know, always felt pretty strongly about this guy's skills, is Kyle Sebastian out of Kelowna. You know, by the age of 21, he had already debuted in Japan for Tajiri and Smash Wrestling. He's been coast to coast in Canada. Cauliflower Alley Club's Future Legend Award winner. Mm-hmm. And I've never met a guy, you know, particularly, you know, any of the WWE legends or anybody who has met Kyle Sebastian that hasn't absolutely loved this guy. And, you know, that goes to from the Million Dollar Man, Teddy DiBiase, to Roddy Piper on down. You know, when people meet this kid, they realize he's got a presence. And you know, I think that for his height, he's like 6'2", 6'3". You know, he could probably use 10 or 15 more pounds for the WWE to get really seriously interested in him. But, again, another young guy, 22, 23 years old. Mm. The third guy is a guy that I've only recently had an opportunity to get to see and know, and that's Casey Andrews, who's also currently wrestling out of the Okanagan. But he was originally trained by Derek Wilde in London, Ontario. And Wilde, you may recognize, he did some stuff with TNA a few years ago. You know, Andrews was over there, and Derek Wilde, I've had an opportunity to work on some shows with him, and probably has one of the biggest egos in Canadian wrestling, bar none, and there's many. Very paranoid about his own spot, so Andrews being in Ontario was never going to be considered for a top spot if it meant being promoted over Derek Wilde. Came to Kelowna with no expectations at all, no idea of what the scene was, and there was no mistaking this guy's ability right off the bat. The fourth guy is a guy out of Winnipeg, wrestles his hotshot, Danny Duggan. Again, a kid that started at a very young age, dealt with a lot of crap in politics in Winnipeg wrestling, and decided himself, you know, a few years ago that that wasn't good enough. You know, he needed to get out on the road. And in the meantime, you know, he's been out to, you know, Ring of Honor tryouts. He's been down to the States. He's been all over Canada, you know, creating his own opportunities in addition to whatever he's done at home to build the wrestling scene in Winnipeg. So among those four guys, I'd say those would be the top four that I think you could see get a major opportunity with a big company if the right opportunities and doors were opened.
All right, fair enough. I want to switch gears. I want to talk about your project, your baby, if you will, the CNWA, the Canadian National Wrestling Alliance. Now, let's just make it worth mentioning, as I said before, this is not affiliated with the NWA down in the States. This is a new project that is relatively new. Why don't you fill everyone in on what the CNWA is all about?
Sure. Well, you know what? Actually, it's kind of a natural segue because it really starts with the whole foundation of what we're doing at the CNWA relates to talent. So how this really works and how it really came together is, you know, there's a number of, you know, wrestling promoters, as you know, who are also wrestlers themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we start talking about, you know, wrestling and opportunities and things like that, okay, let's take a look at, you know, some of the major players. So in Vancouver, you've got Gorgeous Michelle Starr, who has been in the industry for 25 years, has had a tremendous record of producing talent and promoting shows. I think himself single-handedly has promoted more than 800 shows in Western Canada. And the list of guys that have come through his school, you know, we could spend the next hour and still not get through the list. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's a guy that is still actively promoting and still interested to produce talent through his school, but recognizes that, you know what, his window of opportunity to get a contract is up. You know, myself, I fall into that category as well. I'm 36 years old. The WWE is not calling. And, you know, with a young family at home, I don't know that I'm interested to go. Massive Damage out of Edmonton, you know, there's a guy who has been active for 16 or 17 years as a professional. Now he's 40 years old. You know, he's not going to the WWE, but, you know, here we are with, you know, control of schedules, access to all of this talent. Why don't we all get together and, first of all, coordinate schedules so that we're putting the best wrestlers to work in every town, every night. But also take those that collective experience that we have, you know, Michelle Starr, 25 years, myself, 19, Massive Damage, 17, as well as some of the other promoters, and let's put that experience and those resources behind the wrestlers that have an opportunity. And that's really what we've done with the CNWA, and when we started to talk to different promoters about what that opportunity looked like and you know, where we want to go with it, everybody was on board. So within 8 weeks, we had 10 promoters from Vancouver to Winnipeg that said, yeah, we agree with this direction. So, you know, whether it's, you know, booking name talent or just effectively promoting and developing Canadian talent, that's really the platform. And now we're actually, I just got a call earlier today. We're on the cusp of television, which changes the whole ball game for everybody.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if currently, and I'm waiting to go have a meeting tomorrow to confirm the details, but if national television gets secured, that's a game changer for Canadian wrestling.
Wow, that is huge.
How, I wanted to ask you, there are specific organizations across, is it Canada or just Western Canada that this is mostly geared towards?
We started with Western Canada because, you know, geographically, you know, whether people recognize it or not, you know, there is a very distinct divide when you cross from Manitoba to Ontario, mm-hmm. East to west. And partly because it's a 23-hour drive from Winnipeg to Toronto.
Yeah.
So it's not really effective. But, you know, from where we're at here in Red Deer, I'm pretty well at the midway point between Winnipeg and Vancouver. So
who are, what are some of the organizations that are involved with the CNWA then?
So in the, on the West Coast, we've got All Star Wrestling, Michelle Starr's promotion. We've also got Big West Wrestling in Kelowna. Alberta, we've got Monster Pro Wrestling in Edmonton, Pure Power Wrestling in Lethbridge, Canadian All-Pro Wrestling in Calgary. In Saskatchewan, we have Gold Dragon Wrestling in Moose Jaw. In Winnipeg, we've got Canadian Wrestling Elite. And we've just recently reached an agreement with a promotion in Barrie, Ontario, that runs under the banner of Northern League Wrestling. That is has done some shows with Jimmy Jacobs from Ring of Honor and the Gangrel. And, you know, I'm familiar with the promoter, who's a wrestler himself, and I've known him for probably 12 years. We have some interest as well from a promotion in Newfoundland, but it's just a matter of making the logistics of that work so that everyone is getting a benefit. But, you know, when we talk about, you know, being a national alliance, we're very true and committed to that vision that, you know, nothing like having a national title that is only actually defended in two cities.
And that was my next question. Do you have a unified title across the alliance yet, or is there a plan for that?
Yep, actually, we're just in the process right now. The belt is being constructed by Reggie Parks in the United States. Reggie Parks is the king of belts.
Yep.
The best of the best. So I just got a status report that they're just doing the final touches on it, so that should be on my doorstep any day.
Have you seen it? How does it look so far?
They don't do any in-progress shots, so I've just seen the artwork, and I'm itching for a status report because it's 16 weeks in the making. But one of the interesting things and one of the most exciting things for me is, you know, anytime you would have two promoters or three promoters get together, they say, yeah, we're going to work together, and it was all about talent sharing, and that's it. So, you know, we'll use your guys and you'll use our guys. And, you know, what I said with the CNWA is it needs to be bigger than that, because if it's just shows for shows and there is no actual benefit to anybody other than the wrestlers to get a few more dates on the calendar, it's not going to work over the long term. You know, we all need to buy into the vision. And so one thing that's very exciting with the CNWA national title, which is going to be introduced here later this summer, is that the tournament to determine the first national champion will be a tournament of all the regional champions.
Oh, wow.
So the Gold Dragon Wrestling Champion will be there, the Monster Pro Wrestling Champion will be there, the All-Star Wrestling Champion, etc. All eight guys in the tournament are existing champions, so depending on how that negotiation goes, what we really like to see is that the promotions recognize that, you know, this is for the common good. We still want you to keep your regional champions because that's good for your fans and your market, but we all recognize one national champion.
Has there been an official name for this championship yet? Has it been decided upon?
Yeah, we've got a secondary title that's already been introduced, which is the CNWA provincial title.
Okay.
And the CNWA major title will be the CNWA national heavyweight title.
I see. I think a lot of local wrestlers are going to be aiming for that here.
Well, I just hope that egos don't get in the way with, you know, promoters not wanting their champions to lose, or I don't know.
Yeah, that's always a possibility.
Yeah, you know, and that's been, you know, a big worry for me at the beginning, you know, when we were starting, and this really, I mean, we really got the partnership on board at the start of the year, and you were just waiting for one of the promoters to pull rank and say, you know what, well, you know, I'm not going to do this because, you know, whatever reason, egos come to play. And so far, the promoters have been the easiest to deal with.
Well, that's good.
On this, everybody buys in, and you know, when you have a guy like Michelle Starr, who has been around the business for 25 years, you know, in Canada and the States and Japan and Korea and England, he was here 2 weeks ago, wrestling and to see the operation firsthand. And when he got home, I got an email right away that said, "I'm 100% on board with what you're doing. I believe this is the right direction for Canadian wrestling.
Perfect.
Let's make this work."
You had mentioned that the CNWA is, you know, getting a phone call about a possible TV deal. You do have another publication, I'll say, and that's the CNWA magazine. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's always frustrated me about Canadian wrestling is, you know, if I walk in the door to an independent wrestling show and I've never been there before, there's nothing there that tells me what this show is about or who these guys are. So if they haven't done a very effective job at selling me on the product in the ring, but even if they have, I'm walking away from that, maybe remembering one or two guys. And that's the reality. You know what? I think that if you believe in your product, and you really want people to respond to your characters, they need to have something in print. Because if they're really excited about it and you think about it, if you've gone to a baseball game or a hockey game, or you've gone to a really good movie and you go to the theater and you pick up one of those theater magazines that they've got in the famous players, and you see a movie you're excited about, you know, that magazine now becomes a prop when you're telling your buddies, look at this picture, look at this guy, look at this hot chick that was in the movie. And that becomes part of your platform that sells it for people. And, you know, I think that with Canadian wrestling, there is so much to promote and there's so much to be excited about. You know, we could probably sit here for an hour and I could tell you all about Vance Nevada and all the great things that I've done in my career and all the cool things that there are to know about me. But, you know, there's so much more beyond just the 8 minutes that you get to see guys in the ring, and so much that guys have accomplished or experienced, or, you know, like doing the Candelo Northern Death tour and you know, crashing through the frozen lake and needing to wait for somebody with a bulldozer to come and tow you out. Lots of crazy experiences that the regular fan doesn't know just seeing you in the ring. And there's so much to promote about all of these guys.
And so this magazine focuses on these stories that you may not hear in the ring, is that right?
Absolutely, and it gives the wrestlers more of an opportunity to convey their personalities, and we want to ask them about their experiences. So let's talk about, you know, the worst injuries that they've overcome. Let's talk about their opinions of things that are going on in politics or popular culture. You know, really go beyond the surface. We only had, you know, on some of the bigger shows, the wrestlers are out there. They maybe got 8 minutes in front of the public. You know, we need to capitalize on every possible opportunity to let people know who these guys are and what they're about and why they should be excited about them.
So is this like a monthly publication, or is this like a bi-monthly thing, or what?
Yeah, currently we're doing 6 issues a year. And so it's available hard copy at every live appearance. We do it at the live shows, as well as distribute the magazine at all of our Fight for Life speaking engagements. And that's probably something that we should talk about, because it's something that's really exciting and unique in terms of Canadian wrestling.
Well, let's talk about wrestlers. It.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Fill us in.
Yeah. Do my own segues.
Makes our job easy.
Yeah, you know what? When I got together with Massive Damage out of Edmonton, he had been doing some school talks on his own independently, and he's had a really interesting life and career overcoming challenges with addictions, both with drugs and alcohol. And you know, we've had wars with each other at different times, and 4 years ago we were bitter enemies, and now, you know, he's clean and sober, and we're probably the closest friends ever in professional wrestling. And we were sitting down talking, and he goes, listen, it'd be really important for me to get out and tell my story. You know, like, I have overcome my addictions, but many of my friends didn't. And, you know, I've had to put people in the ground and watch this. And, you know, let's talk to kids before they get into this stuff. You know, don't worry about the kids in the high schools that are already trying it and they think they're smarter than everybody. Let's get to the kids, you know, grade 4, 5, and 6, that aren't there yet. And let's try to constructively steer those decisions, you know, before they're faced with making them. So what we did is we put together the CNWA Fight for Life program, which is a youth empowerment speaker series. And we go out into the junior highs and elementary schools, and we talk to kids. And it's not a bunch of contrived bullshit. It is the real life experiences of guys. So Massive Damage talks about his real life experiences with drugs and alcohol and addiction. He talks about you know, gang life and the pressures put on him to get into gangs based on his appearance alone. And then there's also, you know, guys like myself that haven't faced those same challenges, but maybe approach wrestling from a different perspective. So originally I come from a town of 2,500 people in rural Manitoba called Souris. And when I was in the seventh or eighth grade and declared to my peers that when I grew up I wanted to be a professional wrestler, you can imagine the ridicule that you would get from people that, first of all, didn't like it or didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you are a Canadian boy and you want to be an athlete, there's only one place for you to go, and that's the NHL, of course. Yeah. That wasn't for me. So to be able to talk to people and say, this is my experience, you know, and you know, never giving up and dreaming big, and here's all of the different things that I've been able to get into, been able to do television and plays and all kinds of different opportunities, speaking engagements at universities, completely bizarre. You know, so always dream big. And so we're doing a lot of that, and we've done five so far since February, and it looks like September is going to be very busy. We have a whole school district in northern Alberta that said they want to have us in, and they've got 21 schools, and they want to have us at all of them. So
that sounds like a really, really good idea.
And do you find that the reaction from the children or kids has been generally positive?
You know, what's interesting is, you know, I did one of the school talks, you know, myself, and then we went to another town where I was the villain that night, wrestling wow. against massive damage. And so I didn't do the school talk that day. But you would not believe how much these 7 and 8 year old girls completely fell in love with massive damage after hearing his story.
Yeah,
and
sure.
wanted to kill me dead.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. All right. Well, the CNWA, we should have mentioned it earlier. If anyone wants to find out information, they can go to cnwawrestling.ca, and we'll throw that up on our website as well. I want to quickly touch on, you know, you are an author, Vance. You have a book. It's called Wrestling in the Canadian West. You have shown it to me before personally. It is an outstanding book. Just fill everyone in on what that book is all about.
Sure. You know, mostly, you know, when I started it, it was because, you know, you've been on the road and heard all the stories from different wrestlers, and I never saw any of those reflected accurately in any wrestling books that had been put out. So, you know, sure, we've got lots of wrestling books about Canadian wrestling that focus on Stampede Wrestling and the Hart family. And yeah, definitely, that's a big part of Canadian wrestling, but it only represents about one third of the whole story. And there was dozens of wrestlers that had never been acknowledged in print, you know, who played a big role in wrestling, both in Canada and internationally. So it was really important for me to tell those stories and get that out. So when I started putting the book together, it probably took me about 10 years start to finish. And what it is a full 100-year history of Canadian wrestling in the western half of the country. And it's a chapter by chapter on each of the promotions, including their title histories and also stats of the top 25 wrestlers based on matches and wins in each of those circuits. So we've really worked hard to acknowledge as many guys as possible by name as we could.
And I was amazed at how thorough the stats and facts are in this book. Just how did you keep track of all this throughout the years? And, you know, where did these stats and facts come from?
You know what, the research, you know, to originally get it going was probably the most tedious activity of my life. And if I realized how big the job was when I started, I probably wouldn't have done it. But you get so deep into a project, you're like, okay, it's too late to stop now. I need to keep going. So all in, I think I've come very close to tracking down results for 20,000 shows.
Wow.
Just in Western Canada from 1904 to the present.
That's crazy.
And yeah, and then what I would do for the research, because nobody kept records, so it was all, you know, you go to find out I'm wrestling in Regina one night, for example, and I would get there super early so that I could go to the library and do the research earlier in the day. So go to get into Regina at 9 o'clock in the morning and go to the library for 5 hours and then go get ready for the match. And that was kind of my schedule for, you know, the 10 years that I was putting it together.
That's dedication.
Yeah. And, you know, how has the response been for this book since it's been published?
You know what? I think I've only had one piece of hate mail, and that was from that's not entirely true.
I'm sure there are some people that probably would argue some of the stuff written in the book. I mean, that's expected, but...
Yeah, you know, there was one promoter in Winnipeg who thought that I damaged his legacy by what I had written in the book, and so he's been completely anti anything to do with me since. I know that most of the people in ECCW, because we're talking about the West Coast on this program, not fans of the book.
Hmm. Really?
And, you know, part of that stems from personal relationships that I had with people in ECCW prior to me leaving the West Coast. You know, there's irreparable damage in some of those situations.
Yeah.
But what's really been rewarding is, you know, when we did the book, my publisher told me, you know, we're going to publish it because it's important work. And you've obviously put a lot of work into it, but we don't expect it to sell more than 200 copies because history books don't sell. I sold 350 copies in 10 weeks.
Wow.
And now we're somewhere around 1,000 books sold, which is enough to qualify for a bestseller in Canada. Hmm. So that's been really good. And after the book sold, my publisher said, obviously, not only do you know how to write it, you know how to sell it. So we will commit to anything that you ever want to write.
Beautiful.
So I've got commitments for 3 more books. I just need to find time to write them. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. The book is called Wrestling in the Canadian West. I consider it the encyclopedia of wrestling in Western Canada.
I can't wait to dive into it.
Yeah. If someone wants to pick up a copy of this book, Wrestling in the Canadian West, how can they do that, Vance?
The best place to get it, if you're looking to buy it online, is directly from the publisher, which is www.crowbarpress.com, and they're based out of Hendersonville, Tennessee. I also still travel with the book, so whenever I'm making a personal appearance, if you see that Vance Nevada is on the schedule, and I'll be back in the Vancouver area on Friday, June 22nd in Cloverdale. Usually have a small stack of books with me and always willing to talk Canadian wrestling with fans young and old.
And speaking of you coming to the West Coast, you have a big match coming up against Gangrel. Is that what you're speaking about, I'm assuming?
Yeah, this will be my third match with Gangrel, second match one-on-one. My hearing has just returned in my right ear from our last match together.
Oh, wow.
What fans don't realize is, you know, when you get, you know, in the ring with some of these former WWE guys, there really is a wide scale of expectations. So if you have somebody that maybe was at the top of their game in 1988, some of them don't want to work hard anymore. Huh. And some of them do. Bushwhacker Luke at 62 years old is one of the hardest workers I've ever met in my life at any age. Gangrel is in that category as well. You know, he's a guy who is 280 pounds and, you know, still moves around the ring, like he did when people saw him on television. And, you know, when you can get a match with a guy who is really competitive like that, who is really sharp like that, who works, you know, every match on the independents like it's pay-per-view. It's exciting to be a guy in the ring with him, but it's also great for the fans to get out and see a guy who's busting his ass, you know, to make their ticket spend worthwhile.
I got to admit, Vance, I thought you were going to go south and start trash-talking the guy.
You know what? I think that's usually my undoing in interviews because unless they book me with a guy that I really don't respect, you know, I just can't do it. I need to promote.
He can sell a book, but he can't sell the match. The love hate, I guess. I don't know. I'm just joking. All right, Vance. We're out of time here. I just wanted to say thank you very much for coming on the show. Again, if anyone wants to pick up Vance Nevada's book, they can do so at blackcrowpress.com. That's right?
That's right.
Crowbar Press.
Crowbar Press.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. I can't promote anything, obviously. So, all right. Vance, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. James appreciates it.
Absolutely.
And,
thank you, sir.
We'll have you again on the program very soon.
It's my pleasure. We didn't even get into talking any trash this time, so we'll have to get together again soon.
I will look forward to that interview for a day down the road for sure.
You bet.
Thanks, Vance. And
thanks a lot, guys.
No worries. Speaking about this book, Wrestling in the Canadian West, mm-hmm. we're lucky enough tonight to give away a copy.
Wow.
To a lucky fan who's listening to Smack Talk Radio Live tonight.
Swag on Smack Talk Radio Live?
It's almost unheard of, isn't it?
Wow, it's just... The Skyfall?
Now, we had asked Vance Nevada for a trivia question that we could ask the fans, and his response was, well, we'll keep it easy. Except you and I...
we both didn't know at first.
So the trivia question, it may be easy to Vance, but it ain't easy for us. Might not be so easy for you as well. Maybe. But the trivia question, if you want to win a chance... if you want to win an opportunity... Sorry, let me start that again. If you want to... have an opportunity at winning Vance Nevada's book, Wrestling in the Canadian West. This is the trivia question that you need to answer, and you're going to send your response to onair@smacktalkradiolive.com. The question is, what Canadian wrestler was a headliner at WrestleMania 1? Interesting.
Again, that's onair@smacktalkradiolive.com.
You think we would have known that, James? We're hosts of a wrestling radio show.
Oh, it's just... terrible, isn't it? But that's why people tune in, is for to hear us stumble over our words and
that's right,
you know, trip over the gate.
Thanks again to Vance Nevada for coming on the program. And coming up on this show that we like to call Smack Talk Radio Live, we have one segment left, and that's tonight's top five. And the topic tonight, James,
the top five WWE quitters.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, welcome back to Smack Talk Radio Live. And as always, it's tonight's top five. Now, in honor of Brock Lesnar quitting, it only seemed appropriate, James, that we come up with a top five list of guys who have quit the WWE.
Sounds good to me, man.
Kick it off with number five.
Number five, we're going with Nathan Jones. Everybody remember him? Now, originally brought into the WWE from the World Wrestling All-Stars promotion to be a protege of The Undertaker, Nathan Jones would make his television debut on the April 8th, 2003 edition of SmackDown, picking up a victory against Bill DeMott. Now, helping The Undertaker in his feud against The Big Show and A-Train leading into WrestleMania 19, Jones was actually left off the card due to his limited in-ring skills and would be written off television shortly after by having his ankle injured by the full-blooded Italians, remember them, when they used the ring steps to hit his legs. Now, after attempting to hone his skills in Ohio Valley Wrestling for a few months, Jones would actually quit the WWE in December of that year due to the wear and tear of the WWE's heavy travel schedule.
I could not stand Nathan Jones when he was wrestling.
He was terrible.
He looked very stiff. And in fact, I remember hearing complaints from other wrestlers of how he was in the ring. Anyways, I had mentioned that this list was the top five guys that had quit the WWE. Well, number four, it's actually a girl, and her name is Gail Kim. Beginning her professional wrestling career in 2000 in the Canadian independent circuits, Gail Kim would eventually land a spot in the WWE in 2002 after sending her tape into officials. After making her way through Ohio Valley, she would eventually make her way up to the main roster where she'd win the Women's Championship. After being released in 2004, Gail will do a stint. She would do a stint for a few years in TNA before returning to the WWE in 2008. Kim would eventually become unhappy with the way Creative was handling her second tenure, and after eliminating herself from a Women's Battle Royal on the August 1st, 2011 edition of Monday Night Raw, Kim would quit the company, vowing never to return to the promotion.
You know what? Again, there's a classic example of an underutilized talent, because she was actually really good as far as women wrestlers go.
But what she did to leave the WWE, that is very unprofessional.
Very.
And I do not forgive her for that.
No, she burnt her bridges totally.
Number three, Chavo Guerrero, the nephew of Eddie Guerrero and the grandson of Gory Guerrero. Chavo made his professional wrestling debut in Japan and Mexico in 1994 before joining the WCW in 1996. Chavo would wrestle in the WCW until the promotion folded in 2001 and would win the WCW Cruiserweight Championship twice. Using the famous Guerrero Frog Splash, Chavo made the move over to WWE and won the now defunct WWE Cruiserweight Championship four times and the Tag Team Championship twice with his Uncle Eddie. After Eddie passed away and his tenure progressed, Chavo would become disillusioned with his continuous role at the bottom of the card and would be asked to be released from his contract in late 2011. Chavo now works sporadically in the indie circuits.
Okay, that brings us to number two, Batista. Dave Batista began his wrestling career in the year 2000, trying out at the WCW Power Plant, and he was told that he would never have a career in pro wrestling. Little did they know. He would then wrestle in Ohio Valley Wrestling as Leviathan before making the move up to WWE in 2002 as an enforcer for the Reverend Devon. Now, Batista's career would really take off in 2003 when he became part of the Evolution stable alongside Triple H, Flair, and Randy Orton. Now, after he had left Evolution in 2005 and his popularity grew, Batista would go on to become a four-time World Heavyweight Champion, a two-time WWE Champion, and the winner of the 2005 Royal Rumble. In early 2010, though, Batista would become disenchanted with the professional wrestling industry and quit the WWE, stating he was unhappy with the direction the product was going and that he was going to pursue a career in mixed martial arts.
Something tells me, though, this is not the last we've seen of Dave Batista.
I could see him coming back.
I would say sooner than later as well.
His MMA career went pretty much nowhere.
Mm. All right, this would bring us to our number one WWE quitter.
I quit!
What? What did he just say? He said he quit. What? I don't know if JBL even believes what he just said. Has anybody ever just quit at WrestleMania? That I know of. Pretty historic.
Yes, our number one spot this week in the top five goes to a man that we both saw at the Hall of Fame ceremony, John Bradshaw Layfield.
Who was excellent at the Hall of Fame
ceremony.
Very good,
yes, very good. Now, John Charles Layfield, better known as JBL or Bradshaw, he made the number one on this list not because he quit the WWE for being unhappy or underutilized, but just for the way that he quit and how it was so damn memorable. Now, John would begin his pro wrestling career in 1992, being trained by Brad Rennigan in Texas's Global Wrestling Federation before signing a WWF contract in 1995 and debuting as Black Jack Bradshaw. Now, as his career progressed, he would become one half of one of the most dominant tag teams in the WWF's Attitude Era, the APA, and he would win the tag team titles three times along with his partner Ron Simmons. Now, in 2005, though, John would reach the pinnacle, becoming WWE Champion after defeating Eddie Guerrero, and he would hold on to the title, Corey, for a whopping 280 days, which is a record for a SmackDown superstar. Now, after winning the IC title in the March of 2009, JBL would face Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania 25. Now, after losing this match in 21 seconds, which is a record, actually, that held until Daniel Bryan this year, JBL would grab a microphone, and as we heard in the clip that we just played, he emphatically stated that he was quitting the WWE. But in reality, though, John was leaving to pursue avenues as a financial advisor and a political radio talk show host, but he still makes sporadic appearances time to time for the WWE. Now, for quitting in grandiose fashion on the biggest show of the year, JBL, this week, takes the number one spot on our top five list.
And you know, JBL still in very good, he still has a very good relationship with the WWE these days. He can come back any day he wants.
And that's the funny part about him being number one on this list. Out of everybody here, he's, you know, got the best relationship with the WWE at this point. So.
For sure. Before we get out of here, James, I wanted to let you know that Mark Henry underwent surgery this week.
Yeah, I was reading something about that. Man, I hope...
Possibly career-ending.
Oh, man.
It's not specified what the surgery is about, but that would be very tragic.
That sucks, because Mark Henry's always been one of my favorite guys.
Yes, not good news if that is the case. I would like to see the Hall of Pain come back.
Absolutely. That was such a good... you know, storyline gimmick they had going, and they just...
They cut it off.
You know, it's like every time they got something good, they have to squash it. I don't know. Brodus Clay style.
Yep. All right. That'll do it for another Thursday edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. Thanks again to Vance Nevada for joining us in the local wrestling scene. And just remember, everyone, you have an opportunity to win his book, Wrestling in the Canadian West. Basically, the encyclopedia of wrestling here in Canada.
Tell them what that trivia question is again.
Who was the Canadian headliner in WrestleMania 1? You want to email your response to...
onair@smacktalkradiolive.com.
Oh, thanks.
Send them in.
I was getting there.
It didn't sound like it.
Now, on next week's show, we have a fantastic interview lined up. I'm not going to spoil it quite yet, but it is a big one. And it's definitely going to be worth tuning in for. That's all I'm going to say. Over the limit this Sunday, James?
Not going to buy it.
Alrighty, that's all I need to hear.
Don't forget, you can find us online, www.smacktalkradiolive.com. Or if you're on Facebook, facebook.com/smacktalkradio. Or if you're hip, you're cool, you want to be trendy, @SRL Radio. Follow us on Twitter.
I bet you people don't follow us on Twitter because we keep saying hip, trendy.
Really? You think so?
No, I don't know for sure, but I'm just taking
a guess. You don't know for sure.
All right, let's get out of here. We will be back on Monday, hopefully, for SRL on a Monday night.
That's right.
I mean, I'm telling you, we're canceling that show when the 3-hour Raws come on.
No kidding.
All right, I'm Corey Callahan.
I am James McDonald.
And we will see you next week.